Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, August 24th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, how are things?
Very good. Thank you, Graham.
So I'm still broadcasting from a recording from Italy. I'm making my way back to Paris eventually. But it's been a really great trip, and it's been fun to kind of continue to do these even as I've been traveling. We've got a few updates this week. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's happening on the wires? I know it's starting to get into that transitional phase with some news for the coming season filtering in and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, we're sort of heading towards the back end of August, so lots of candidates from last season are now beginning their, for the most part, I guess, virtual MBA experience at this point. And that's sort of ramping up. We're still seeing a little bit of activity off the wait list this last week, but that's sort of starting to ease to an end, I think, and the reality of the situation and so forth. We're also seeing some folks, they've applied Columbia Early Decision, for example, getting some interview invites. So the new season is beginning, Graham.
Yeah, it's exciting. So I think the other thing that happened is last week we did our Admissions Academy, which was about application forms and all the pitfalls and requirements of filling out these online applications for business school. We've actually shared that stuff with anyone who's registered for the Academy if they need the PDF or the video, and you can always ping us and get that stuff from us too. The next lesson is actually going to be in a week and a day. And it's all about interviewing. So stay tuned for that. It'll be September 1st. That's going to be, I don't even know how we're going to pack all the information we have about interviewing for business school into an hour, but we'll do our best. There's a lot of stuff to cover there.
Probably mostly how do you do virtual interviews? Because I imagine that's going to be the majority of interviews this season, Graham.
Yeah, most schools have already been announcing that. So we will definitely devote a lot of the discussion to, what's different when you're doing this virtually. So we'll get into that. Continuing to trickle out are these admissions director Q&As where we sit down with admissions directors and run articles on the site about what they have to say about their program and admissions process. And so Yale SOM just went up, a good conversation with Bruce Delmonico over there. And then another just quick tidbit type news, Kellogg has announced a kind of joint engineering tech MBA, which they're calling the MBAI, little I. So that's kind of interesting news. We did a piece about that on the website, so you can read up more on that. The only other thing, Alex, is there's kind of some big news, and this isn't, I know people who listen to this podcast regularly know that I've been hinting at something coming down the line, which is about the data we have on our site, and that's still in the works. But in the interim, we've got some really exciting news in that we're going to run a couple of applicant workshops, which are going to be around essays. And they're going to be two kind of virtual events. One is September 2nd and one is September 16th. And they're both at 12 p.m. Eastern U.S. time. But the key thing is that what we're going to do is we're going to sit down with admissions folks from leading business schools in a kind of roundtable discussion, and we're going to ask them all about their essay questions and how they came up with the questions, what they're looking for, and we'll give them a chance to showcase some of the elements of their, their program and how that sort of dovetails with the essay questions they're asking. But again, this is really with the applicant in mind. So if you're interested in Chicago Booth, Columbia, Duke, MIT Sloan, Wharton, and Yale, and there may actually be some additional schools to be announced, you should absolutely sign up for these events. We're going to do two of them. Each one will have, three or four schools represented. And, again, just some great insights on tap from their admissions teams. So I'm looking forward to that. It's exciting. I don't know if you've had a chance to digest the magnitude of this, but I think it's going to be cool.
Yeah, and you're emceeing it, right, Graham? So if the schools aren't fully disclosing stuff, I'm sure you'll push them to get that additional insight. So, I think it's a very imaginative way to run a virtual workshop like this. So, Yeah, I think it'll be really good.
Yeah. So, and I got signed up for emceeing. I'm looking forward to it. Luckily, I know most of these schools and feel like I have a good rapport. So we'll see if we can get some really interesting insights out of them. And again, we designed these with the applicant in mind. So we're going to try to ask questions that we know candidates would want the answers to. Other than that, Alex, you picked out three ApplyWire entries.
Yep.
They span the globe. This week's going to be really interesting. So unless you have anything else, I think we can dive in and kind of move on with the wiretaps portion here.
No, I think we should kick on. Yep.
All right. So this is wiretaps candidate number one. So this person's got 8 schools on their target list. They're hoping to start in the fall of 2021. And the schools are Berkeley, Dartmouth, Duke, Harvard, ESA, Stanford, Wharton, and Yale. And this person's been working in government, but in a kind of innovation-related role. And they want to end up post-MBA, ideally in kind of, they indicate tech. They're currently in Latin America, would love to end up right after business school in the Bay Area with a long-term view of returning to their home country. This candidate mentioned that she has a social sciences degree, and I think from the top university in her home country. And she's really got some interesting work experience in that she's been working as like a product manager for the Ministry of Education in her country, and you know, been involved with several high-profile projects. One was actually COVID relief efforts related. And for one reason or another, she's got strong ties and I believe has visited both ESA and Yale SOM and has met, you know, admissions reps and felt like there was a really good rapport with both of those schools. So those are kind of at the top of her list. She knows that she's got to, you know, throw in some others, and she mentions that she visited Stanford, Wharton, and Harvard and liked them all. She has yet to take the standardized test, but she's planning on taking the GRE and is expecting around a 328 total, which is, you know, right around the average of those target schools. And she also just mentioned she speaks 4 languages and wants to transition into tech and then, you know, ideally, again, return to her home country, where she did mention ESA and Yale have strong networks. So you actually went back and forth with this candidate, Alex. What do you make of this candidacy and her plans?
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, I think she's got a lot of upside potential. I was just actually re-reviewing the ApplyWire entry. I didn't see anything on the sort of extracurriculars and outside interests. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure she does have outside interests, and I do think her career sort of lends to a good breadth of interesting stuff. So if she's not super engaged outside of her work, I'm not sure that's as big of a deal. And maybe it's also a cultural issue. But I do think Latina, female, coming out of Latin America, that puts you in a profile that's definitely underrepresented. I think you would agree to that, Graham. And she's been extremely successful, is my sense, in terms of her government-related work. Frankly, Graham, if she gets the target GRE score that she's aiming for, high 320s, her GPA is a 3.2, or it's translated to a 3.2, but I think after a little bit of conversation, I think on a relative sort of ranking scale, I think her GPA is good. And she talked about a thesis that she undertook that received, you know, high plaudits and so on and so forth. Graham, there's a lot to like here. She should be targeting the very best schools, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the only thing she mentioned in terms of an outside activity that caught my eye, she said she mentors women with similar backgrounds that want to go into tech and innovation. But it sounds like it's sort of sporadic and not maybe formalized. But as you correctly point out, in some you know, cultures, it's less common to have like a full slate of like formalized extracurricular activities as we might have in America or in other markets. So again, yeah, I tend to agree. I did wonder, for someone who wants to end up in the Bay Area working in tech, and I'm kind of going to assume that, you know, some of the firms she would want to go to are the usual suspects.
Yeah.
I wondered whether, you know, she should really be, you know, focused on some of the very best schools and even with a bit of a West Coast bent. So that, you know, you look at, she has Haas and Stanford on the list, Harvard's on the list, Wharton. Those would be schools that I think of as, you know, giving her great odds at both placing into the Bay Area and also having that kind of global network and brand. Now, she did mention that Yale and ESA, which are also on her list, are kind of at the top, and that she has these connections there and really likes both programs. I mean, they're both terrific schools as well. I just think if the GRE comes in where she's saying it's going to come in, that it sort of sky's the limit. I mean, she has a really interesting profile. You mentioned Latina and, you know, from Latin America. With these kind of numbers and background, working in government is really fascinating to me as well. You don't see that as often. And so I think, yeah, sort of sky's the limit. So I would just encourage her to aim high if the GRE yeah. comes in where she's expecting it to.
And her point of view in terms of ISA, for example, so if she wants to work on the West Coast of the United States coming out of the MBA, ISA does seem a little bit of an odd choice, but her sort of comeback to that is in the long run, she'll return to Latin America. And from where she is, ISA has a very strong network.
Yeah.
So it's sort of balancing in the short run, the networks and the access to opportunities on the West Coast. In the long run, access to opportunities and a strong network in Latin America. She's looking for that combination, which I completely understand. I also think probably, again, Harvard, Stanford, Wharton, within her reach would provide her great access to both geographies and industries. So, yeah, I mean, frankly, I know and we didn't really talk about this at the beginning of the podcast in terms of the feedback for this podcast, Graham, which we were very grateful for in the surveys that we conducted. I know one of the criticisms in that feedback is we need a bit more diversity in terms of the candidates we talk about, maybe pointing to, top 20 programs, top 30 programs. And that would be great if we got more of those candidates posting on ApplyWire.
Yeah.
But this week, you're not going to see those candidates, unfortunately. You're going to see lots of very cool international candidates, I think. But we do recognize the feedback and absolutely appreciate all that feedback.
Yeah, agreed.
I should have acknowledged that before. But this candidate in particular, Graham, absolutely great execution on the applications. She's underrepresented profile in my mind for sure. No rush to get the applications in terms of round one versus round two. So she needs a bit more time to get that GRE to where she feels is justified. Round two will absolutely suffice. She should be aiming very high.
Yeah, I agree. One last thing is that, we don't talk as much about European schools, but ESA is a really strong MBA offering yeah. in Europe. I mean, I think of it as being, it's in that peer group with INSEAD and LBS and some of the other top schools in Europe. It's also a case, heavy case-based program and has some ties to Harvard Business School in terms of the way that it was conceived and set up. So it is a great program. I do always feel like you're always best off in market when it comes to your short-term goals. So like if you want to be in the Bay Area, you're best off being in the United States when you're going to graduate from business school so you can do all the recruiting and everything. But again, let's see where the chips fall with respect to her test score and when she gets her apps in. And it sounds like she has a good range of schools that she's considering. So best of luck to her. Yeah.
And ESA is also in Barcelona, right? So it's not a bad,
yeah,
not a bad place to spend a couple of years.
Exactly. All right. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this candidate has five schools on the target list again for the fall of 2021. Hoping to matriculate then. The schools are Berkeley, Harvard, Kellogg, Stanford, and Booth. And this person indicates that they've been working in finance and global health, hoping to kind of stay in that health domain, kind of pharma post-MBA. GPA was 3.67. They have 3 years of work experience and are currently in Chicago. But they did note, this gentleman noted that he is actually a first-generation immigrant from West Africa. He's 30 years old, he also shared that. And post-MBA doesn't really care about location. In the notes, he mentioned that he's been working in pharma for the last few years and has worked both in the kind of finance side and global health and is really interested in expanding access to medicines for low-income countries and communities. And he wants to kind of get the MBA to really help him, lead sustainable business models for emerging markets. So, you and I actually talked about this candidate prior to kind of recording. And, one of the things is that he hasn't yet taken the GRE or the GMAT and is planning to do so in the fall. So we were kind of wondering, okay, well, where's that going to land? But what was your take on this candidate? I had a big question mark that I mentioned to you, which we'll get into, but what was your take?
Yeah, I mean, a 3.67 GPA, I mean, that signals to me this is a smart candidate. Obviously, they've got to take the GRE, and hopefully they can do very well in that too. I mean, my advice to the candidate is that's the one unknown in this candidacy. So make sure that you prep super, super hard for that, because that's the one that outstanding variable that could clearly impact where the candidate ends up. They've got a 3-year career in pharma, and I'll let you talk about that particular the timeline in a minute, so I won't hijack your issue. And their firm is sponsoring them, in as much as the fact is that, I mean, they must be quite a strong candidate if they're getting sponsored by the firm. They've got a job to come back to post MBA, so that's always going to be very good. I do like the long-term goal. So an MBA degree will help me develop, scale, and lead sustainable business models for emerging markets. And I'm assuming he's talking about markets back in, you know, from where he's originally from, or at least his heritage. He's a first generation immigrant from West Africa, so I'm assuming that's the geography he's targeting in the long run. I might be wrong there, but that would make sense to me, and would make that long term goal more palatable. I think the nice thing about the long term goal is it's absolutely has the potential for high impact, and you know, if it's attainable with potential for high impact, that's what the ADCOM is looking for, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of, they want to admit people that in the long run are going to be successful alumni doing incredible things. So this candidate may well square away that. The only other thing I'll add, and then I'll get back to your particular issue, is the choice of schools I thought was a little bit odd. Someone coming from pharma with a real global focus and so on and so forth. Wharton is not on the list. I think that's a mistake. I know we are connected to Wharton, Graham, through our previous work, myself, and obviously you're an alum. But, I mean, anyone that's familiar with the healthcare sector and MBA, you know, top-tier MBA programs would have Wharton very close to the top of the list in this case. So hopefully we can steer them in that direction, Graham. But yeah, I'll turn it back to you.
Yeah, I think, so the first thing that jumped out at me with this candidate, and I agree, like the storyline overall is interesting. I like the pharma healthcare focus and the goals. Everything's kind of, you know, a plus in my view, and the GPA solid. We'll see where the GRE lands. Hopefully it's strong. But the thing that jumped out at me was, if this person's 30 and has 3 years in pharma, what were they doing between, say, age 22 and 27? And that was unclear to me. And I also don't know what the timeline is. Like, did this person go to undergraduate in the United States? So is that 367 from, like, University of Chicago, where they're currently based? Or is it from somewhere in West Africa? Like, I don't have enough information, I think, to fully assess that. But I did wonder, yeah, where are all those years that are missing? And it could be that it's a kind of a bootstrap story where they didn't, head over to the US until after university and work their way into the current job that they have and don't have, you know, the kind of like resume, type stuff for those first couple of years or something. I have no idea, right? So it'd be good to know that though. But I do agree, if this person wants like the international network, the operations chops and healthcare management training, then it'd be really odd for them not to have Wharton's healthcare management program on their list. I mean, Wharton, along with, say, Duke and Kellogg, those are three programs that have a really heavy, or the ability to have a really heavy focus on healthcare management and pharma. And so, you know, I felt like the school list was a little bit more driven by, hey, it'd be really cool to live here for a couple of years, as opposed to, these are the programs that are going to get me where I need to go with respect to my career. So that's all. I think... my advice for this candidate would be refine that school selection, get a good score on the test, and by all means, put the sponsorship of your employer to the fore. Like, there's no issue. They asked that question when they posted, is it a plus to be sponsored by your employer? And I think that's actually a good question just for our listenership in general. And the answer is yes. And the reason is that, like you said, if an employer is sponsoring a candidate, it means that they really believe that it's worth dropping, you know, more than 100,000, whatever it's going to be, to send this person off to business school. And so that's a huge signal, right? And then the other thing is that the candidate has a place to go after business school. So like the career services piece of the MBA, you know, experience is sort of already buttoned up. So, I mean, you know, obviously the career services office always likes to have at least some candidates for whom it, everything's kind of a fait accompli, right? So,
yeah.
So I think it's a plus and they should talk about it. I mean, it's usually, I think it's usually asked in most of the data forms anyway. So it'll come up.
Yeah. Just back to this timeline thing, Graham. So you talk about the idea that maybe they were bootstrapped, or maybe the beginning of their career, you know, wasn't up to snuff or whatever, and then they had to work their way to get to where they are, and then they've had the last 3 years of a very interesting experience, and that's what they talk about. If that's the story, I think that could be a really inspiring story.
Absolutely.
So there is two ways to sort of look at that story. It could be very inspiring, or it could be positioned or whatever, sort of quite, you know, ho-hum or whatever, and doesn't hit the mark. But to me, that can be an inspiring element of the overall candidacy. The other explanation for this gap, maybe they were in graduate school and they just didn't include that in their profile, right? So it might be that they did an undergraduate degree, then they continued their studies for a master's or whatever it might be. But as you point out, there's a gap there, we just don't know. And that gap will inform the overall quality of this candidacy. The person did say, and not that this is why we picked them, but probably it was why I picked them, I started listening to the ClearMint podcast last week and found it very helpful. Would love to hear your thoughts. So you're on the podcast. Hopefully you're listening and you can let us know what that gap truly entailed.
Yeah. And I think if I were a betting man, your hypothesis is a great one. They probably did a master's degree and, you know, and maybe in the US, and that maybe led them into their employment in the US. So, but it'd be good to know. Yeah. So they mentioned the podcast is helpful. They've only been listening for a week, so we'll see what they say, you know, down the road. all right. So let's move on and talk about ApplyWire, the wiretaps candidate number 3. So this one's another ApplyWire entry, and they have 8 target schools on their list. Again, wanting to start in the fall of 2021, and the schools are Berkeley, Columbia, Harvard, Michigan, Kellogg, Stern, Booth, and Wharton. And this person's been working in, they say, HR and kind of management consulting, and are hoping to get into consulting post-MBA with targets of Bain, BCG, and McKinsey. But they did mention in the notes that they're also hoping to move longer term into food and beverage, which is a domain they've been doing some work in already pre-MBA. GMAT score 760, and the GPA is 3.35. 5 years of work experience, located in Hong Kong, and wants to land in New York or San Francisco after business school. They did mention that they're a U.S. citizen, and that they're Asian American, and they have decent extracurriculars with some pro bono consulting work. They got a President's Award for Community Service. I guess that would have been back when they were in college. And, you know, they mentioned that they've also worked at a startup in their free time that's managed to bring in $2 million in revenue. So interesting background. I kind of immediately was drawn to the idea that, you know, this person's working internationally, but is a U.S. citizen. That's not your everyday thing. So and the numbers are good, but what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, again, as I mentioned a little bit previously, these are 3 potentially outstanding candidates. So let's not beat around the bush. 760 on the GMAT, 335 GPA. You would say, well, actually, that's lower than average. But chemical engineering, I mean, that's wickedly hard, you know, area, or you know, is a tough engineering degree. And the 760 tells me they're very smart. They've done some really interesting things. I have a lot of good things to say about this candidate. Funnily enough, Graham, and just one little thing for this candidate to make sure they don't fall foul of. They say where did they first put it in? Anyway, oh. My short-term goals are meant to learn more about F&B industry, where I can be in, where they want to be in the long term. So I'm thinking about this, I'm like, oh, they want to be in finance and banking. And then I was thinking about it a bit more. I'm like, surely that doesn't make a lot of sense as I was reading more. I literally Googled F&B to see what the acronym is more widely known for. And it's obviously food and beverage. But which then it all sort of tied together and made sense, which was fantastic. But, you know, it's just a simple thing, like making sure you're not using jargon in your applications, because you might come across an adcom like myself who's not as familiar with some of the stuff that you might be doing. The other thing that I thought, and I mean, clearly this person, Graham's listed a lot of top schools, and, you know, with good execution on their candidacy, they should have access to some of these top schools when all said and done. They want to be in, I think I read this correctly, let me read it out. Short-term goals are meant to learn more about the F&B industry, where I hope to be in the long term, specifically to lead expansion into Greater China, mm-hmm. right? So I'm wondering whether they should also include SIEBS on this list.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting idea. And for that matter, whether they want to include at least a school that has a really strong network and ties into China, which could be, or a school with a program that sends you there for part of your MBA, or, you know, INSEAD comes to mind too, right? Because they have the Singapore campus, so they're a stone's throw from China. Like, right. That's a good point. I did wonder, you know, given that they want to work in New York or San Francisco post MBA, I was kind of like, oh, why? You know, they have a bunch of schools in the middle of the U.S. They've got Ross and Kellogg and Booth, which are great schools. I'm just thinking, have they really, you know, touched all the bases in, you know, kind of the New York kind of Northeast corridor and on the West Coast? And obviously they have Haas and they don't have Stanford on the list, which was interesting, too. And I think you had pointed that out. You're kind of wondering, why have they eliminated themselves from Stanford?
They've eliminated themselves from Stanford simply by not applying. Right. Right? I mean, that's the nature of the beast. And maybe they don't want to go to Stanford.
Yeah, it's possible.
But if you're going to put Harvard on your list, I don't see why Stanford wouldn't be on there, too, for a candidate like this.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that jumped out at me as well is I was kind of wanting to know more about the trajectory and, like, where this person went to undergrad. You know, obviously 3.35 in chemical engineering, that's, as you say, a really tough degree. Then the interesting thing, by the way, so I have an MBA from Wharton, and I didn't know what F&B was right away. I had to kind of read through the comments and start to say, oh, it must be food and beverage. And then later, I think he or she revealed that that's what it is. But you don't want your reader to have to kind of, you know, Google something.
Right.
They will not bother, right? So yeah, just keep that in mind. But I was trying to figure out how this all played out. Like, did they go to undergrad in the US in Boston and then work? They mentioned they worked in like biotech in the Boston area, and then they shifted into kind of what they're doing now, which is somewhat related to food and beverage. So it would be good to know more there. And I agree, you know, it'd be also interesting to know, like, what is the connection to China? I presume there are language skills there that they have if they're Asian American, although that's not a guarantee. So it'd just be good to know more around the storyline. But yeah, I mean, they obviously, the 760 probably helps bring that GPA into play for the very top schools. And again, I think it's always interesting if they did go to undergrad in the US, were raised there, pursued a tough undergraduate major, and then have gone off to work internationally. That's kind of a cool story. Not to mention, you know, Hong Kong's kind of an interesting place to be in this moment in time. So there's probably a lot of interesting stories they can tell in their, you know, application materials. So, yeah, I feel like they have the ingredients. It'll really be a question for me of, can they sort of assemble and make the recipe? You know, 8 schools may be too many, so they're probably going to want to whittle that back a little bit. But again, I like this person's goals. One last thing, Alex, do you think that they should go work at Bain, BCG or McKinsey post-MBA? Or do you think that they could, you know, just indicate that they want to go work for Diageo or any of the big name food and beverage entities out there, which, you know, do recruit at these MBA programs?
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point, Graham, in terms of they know the industry specifically they want to be in. So why not step directly into it at this point? Post-MBA, mm-hmm. and most of the top schools will provide them access to doing that. It might just need a little bit more sort of work on their part to sort of match up their goals. I mean, the nice thing about top tier management consulting options is all the top schools provide pretty good access to that, and you're just sort of following the herd, as it were,
right.
through the process. If you're going into the industry directly, you've got to be a bit more disciplined, I would say, mm-hmm. in your recruiting activity at the various schools you end up going to.
Yeah, and I think the point I was trying to make is, and this is a little bit, it might be a little controversial, but I'm just wondering if because there's so many candidates talking about wanting to go work for Bain, BCG, and McKinsey, I wonder if this person would actually stand out more in the process if they just went with their food and beverage goal. Obviously, when they get to business school, if they decide, you know what, I really do want to do management consulting in the short term because it'll give me access to kind of a lifelong network, and it's a good kind of place to use my toolkit from business school before I really take the leap. But I was just wondering if they might differentiate themselves a bit more if they steer clear of the like herd that is I'm going to go to Bain, BCG, and McKinsey, at least in the application process. So anyway, but I think, again, three interesting candidates. I did want to echo what Alex said earlier. We've been really enjoying reading the feedback we got on the survey that we ran about the podcast. Someone asked if we could do it every day. I think that's a no. We're not going to be able to do that. But I think we are taking to heart a lot of the feedback you provided. We'll try to have greater range of schools and candidate types and everything. But again, as Alex pointed out, we're limited in terms of, what's posted on the site, right? So obviously, if you're a candidate listening and you're targeting top 30 schools or have a lower GMAT score, by all means, put your profile up on ApplyWire and we're happy to talk about it. That's not a problem at all.
Yeah. No, absolutely, for sure. I mean, I think, the folks applying to the very, very top schools, they're very interesting stories, but there is, there are more stories to be shared, and there are other options in the admissions process. We're very happy to talk about them, and frankly, very interested to talk about them. So that would be terrific to get some more of those types of profiles.
Yeah, and so I'll just, as we wrap up this week, I'll thank you for picking out the ApplyWire entries, as always. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, please sign up for the Application Insight workshop series that we're doing with those top schools about their essays. The thing I did not mention when I announced that exciting news is that you do have to register, and it's free. You just go on our website. You'll see their banners, and there's an article about this series that we're doing. And again, it's Columbia, Wharton, Yale, Chicago, Duke, and MIT that are thus far on board and are going to be taking part in those two events. So please sign up in advance. You got to register to get a spot. And I suspect that it's going to be limited. So please do so. And other than that, Alex, if you're available next week, we'll record another episode. And I'm looking forward to it as always.
Very good. Looking forward to it. Good luck, everybody, and stay safe.